establish fines or?
They would have the right to levy civil penalties.
Well, I object.
You think penalties should be elsewhere?
I think penalties should be outside. It's a way of financing their company or the cost of their department. Mostly penalties revert to the general fund to keep them from doing just this type of thing.
To keep from encouraging them.
Yes.
Encourage them to go out there. Now, the commissioner says to her people, gosh, we got a little problem here. We're 50 Gs short. I want 50 Gs in penalties.
Spread out across the state.
I want them in 60 days. Otherwise.
Okay, Ms. Chairman, I think.
You want to withdraw that?
I'll withdraw the second half. I think that we should have language that details that fees should go towards the implementation of the act, but penalties levied pursuant to this act should revert to someplace else.
I think the general fund. Let the commissioner go to the emergency, go to the, and on her bended knee and ask pleadingly.
Legal services? You want to go to legal services?
No.
Sure.
No. Thank you. All right. We'll do that. Mr. Dale, did you want to do uncontrollable urge to?
Michael Dale, for the record, I think that the kind of provision that you're talking about is in section 12 on page 10.
You already got
sure
that?
Enough. Sure enough.
Gosh, see, you really have.
Sue, you did everything for us.
Section 12, page 10.
And other monies received by the commission.
Section 12, page 10.
Other monies include civil penalties?
Well, fees and other monies, that's what stimulated my objection.
Okay, well, let's make the fees received the commissioner go to the credit of the bureau and the fines go to the general fund.
Fines and penalties.
Fine, penalties, fines can go to the general fund, and then they can go back and ask for them. Saying, I sent all my people out there to raise 50 Gs, so I could come to you and ask for it back so we could run this program.
Okay, and that's consistent with APD. APD doesn't get fines, penalties either. Okay, okay.
APD does.
Integrity and legislative.
Whoops.
Does APD get?
That's the way they finance their department.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Pompey, Minister of APD, Department of Insurance and Finance. The penalty money, Mr. Chair, goes into the general work comp fund.
That's what, yeah.
In the general worker compensation fund.
In the worker comp.
In the year, may I state for the record, which is public information, in the year 1988, there was $1.5 million of penalties, and it was put into the general worker compensation fund. We have a budget between federal monies and the work comp fund, but those funds are not allocated penalty monies for us, Senator Howe.
It goes back into your agency, but not APD.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, it does not go into, specifically in our agency, it goes into the pool of money. And it could go for administration, worker comp, you know, whatever have you, in the Department of Insurance and Finance.
Great, thank you. Appreciate that. What's next?
Okay.
What did he say, a million five?
I have to back up to page 9 briefly.
Page 9. It's so brief.
Ms. Chairman, it wouldn't be inconsistent to have the penalties go into the BOLI's general budget, not to be expended on this activity.
Let's not back up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Give back. Go give back.
No, we don't do that. Okay.
Page 9, line 11, endorsee, it reads endorsee, subsection 1 now reads endorsee, was previously read operator, and that was a concern that was expressed.
Okay.
Section 10, line.
Madam, Mr. Chair, before we leave section 9, as I was reading it, the sub 3, if you read it, it says that upon the commissioner's own motion, upon a complaint, by an individual, if the endorsee's character, reliability, or competence makes the endorsee unfit to act as a farm worker camp operator, including but not limited to any applicant or operator who makes any material misrepresentation, which I guess is supposed to be saying that if they make material misrepresentation, they are therefore
of
bad character, but I don't, the sentence doesn't really scan.
Do you like bad character?
Let me suggest that we add a sub 4. And that sub three read, endorsee's character, reliability, or competence makes the endorsee unfit to act as a farm worker camp operator.
Period.
Semicolon. Or sub four, applicant or operator makes any material misrepresentation, false statement, or willful concealment in the application for a license or renewal of a license.
Okay. Fine.
Friendly amendment? Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Although I got to tell you, when reading it, what does character, reliability, competence mean?
Good question.
Do we know that? Is that in all of their other statutes? And we have case. Do we have any case law that tells us what character, reliability, or competence is, Mr. Dale, or Ms. Koppel, or anyone else who administers this kind of statute?
Mr. Chairman, there is that language in the existing farm labor contractor statute. To my knowledge, there's no case law pursuant to that. It's been in existence since the 50s sometime and hasn't...
Lousy language. Yeah. That's lousy language. That's, I think it's defective.
Oh,
yes.
You're right.
Senator Karen, members of the committee, Marilyn Koffel, Bureau of Labor and Industries. We do evidently have a definition of that in our rules under the Farm Labor Contractor Law.
You can tell me what bad character is? And
our rules certainly can.
What incompetent is?
I can tell you.
Dumb?
In the wrong dumb.
He's dumb. Is that right? We interviewed him and he was dumb. And we don't... Contractor, is that what it is?
He was late for the interview.
Mr. Chairman, I suggest that at this point in time, since it hasn't been implemented apparently, I mean, it hasn't been used in other provisions.
I'm not sure.
It has been used?
I believe it has been used. When I said there was no case law, I meant there was no published case law of an appellate court. In fact, I believe it has been used. There are definitions of some of the kinds of things, such as prior non-payment of wages, making fraudulent statements on applications, making misrepresentations. I don't think that's a mentioned one. It deserves to be, probably, but there are a number of specific instances.
How about beating farm workers, even though there's not a criminal conviction, things like that?
Well, that's not specified in the rules, as far as I know.
Well, that would be a lousy character, wouldn't it?
I would say that's lousy character.
Even though there's not a criminal conviction, and there's no provision in Section 3 to 19 of this 1989 Act against beating farm workers.
Okay.
So if an operator who has an endorsement beats farm workers, I'd like to have the commissioner have the authority to revoke their endorsement.
And that would be evidence of bad character.
Lousy character, Mr. Chairman. And unless we have kind of an all-purpose provision like this, we're not going to be able to address
this. Okay, let's go ahead and do this. Let's do this. Let's adopt Senator Shoemaker's amendment, breaking that three into three and four, mm-hmm. and we then sever the two, and when they go to the Supreme Court knocks it down as being overbroad and unenforceable, we won't have lost the rest of it.
Okay.
Okay? Let's do that. Thank you. We adopt the Shoemaker amendment. Senator Houck is excused to partake in familial natal day activities. I don't know where Senator Linsky escaped to, but I assume he's in the neighborhood.
It's 5 o'clock.
Oh, his coat's here.
Quitting time,
Mr.
Chairman.
He hasn't gotten too far. Okay. I think everybody ought to have an opportunity to engage in natal day activities.
Hmm?
Okay, line 25, page 9, we inserted a sentence, actually two sentences, regarding the proper process for recording a lien for someone who's had a penalty assessed against them.
Okay.
Fairly standard.
May be with the county clerk.
May be filed.
May be filed with the county clerk.
Ooh.
Should that be shall?
On down a little bit.
No.
So I think it should say the penalty provided in the order so recorded, I'm down in line 28, becomes a lien upon any interest in real property rather than the title to any interest. Because I think we're now allowing liens upon purchaser's interest,
right,
which is not a title.
Right.
And I think that we want it to be a little broader than just title. Might want to check with somebody on that.
I think that the way that it's generally referred to, well, leans, but I'll let,
okay,
I'll check with
you. And then I figure that one out.
And then I think in line 29, it ought to be owned or held by, again, I raise that to.
Owned or held, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. Any objections?
Nitpicks.
Fine. Why don't you be clear that earlier language is now. So where are we next?
We're on,
No, one, excuse me, is it correct that liens are typically only allowed upon real property and not upon other types of property such as personal property?
No, you can get a lien against all kinds of anything.
You can get a lien against
them.
Well, if it's a farm labor contractor against whom the lien is levied, they didn't own the camp, they don't own real property, but they have a lot of equipment and
buses,
things like that.
Automobiles.
I think we should include personal property because a lien could be and would be, in the case of a farm labor contractor operating the camp, levied against a contractor.
Yeah, you'd have to do it a different way, though. You don't file over the county clerk, you may file over the FEC clerk.
They're filed.
It's a different process, and it might be appropriate, but.
You file those up here.
Well, then I suggest we add a section 3. That, or rather, we say, section sub 2, unless the amount of the penalty is paid within 10 days after the order assessing the penalty becomes final, the order shall constitute a judgment, semicolon, and sub A, may be filed with the county clerk, et cetera, sub B.
If it's against real property, and
against
sub
real
B,
property.
Sub
B may be filed
property
with
the
Well, I think we better ask and have to be sure that we.
It's a lot more complicated.
It's more complicated than that.
Well, boilerplate, isn't it?
You know, Sue? I haven't.
Is that right? It's a security interest?
Security interest, right.
Borrowed family material.
It's
maybe Sue has some simple language.
Mr. Day, you have a contribution to make and lead us out of this little thicket?
Michael Dale, for the record, Senator Cairns, as a suggestion, I think that what this language is borrowed from another statute as well, is attempting to get at is that this is a judgment that has the same force and effect as other judgments of the court. Now, those judgments don't normally automatically become liens against real property unless you execute on the judgment in accordance with a variety of procedures that are set forth in the statutes and rules of civil procedure, depending upon the nature of the interest. So it seems to me what the committee really wants to say is that it's a judgment that can be enforced or that can be executed upon in the same manner and with the same effect as a judgment of the circuit court.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's intended to go one step beyond that. It's because judgments, if filed with the clerk of a county in which real property is located, become a lien upon the real property, and you don't have to execute upon the judgment. It just sits there as a lien, and when the person tries to sell the property, bingo, there's a lien against it. And I think we want to be sure that this does that, so it gives you better protection than merely execution upon a judgment. You might want to do the similar thing regarding personal property belonging to the camp operator and give him the same problem. When he tries to sell it, you've got a essentially a lien against it. But you don't need to first execute, because execution is an expensive, time-consuming, and often frustrating and fruitless pursuit.
I was really addressing more the question of what you do about personal property, and the Senator is correct in my understanding that this does have the additional advantage of putting a lien on real property, which, of course, any judgment of the circuit court does automatically. But the question is, if we're going to try to specify all of the ways that you affect title for all of the different kinds of personal property, it's going to get awfully complex. And it seems to me,
why don't we forget that as something what we would like to do but can't accomplish this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Sue, what kind of boilerplate do you have that you can stick in here as a new subsection allowing a lien against personal property?
Okay.
Senator Karen and Senator Hill. Legislative Council and the Attorney General's Office have been working for the past 4 years to come up with this collection boilerplate. Mm-hmm. And any bill that comes through, we are doing everything we can to see that it sticks with this boilerplate, because we've had some real difficulties with different boilerplate throughout the statute. We don't have any other boilerplate at this time.
Dealing with personal property?
I would have to go through. I don't know that we have worked on personal property in the statutes. It might be in a private relationship, but as far as the state seizing personal property, I would have to go in perhaps into the tax statutes and see what we have there.
I'm going to take the furniture and the TV.
But I would want to make a whole new section that would deal with personal property, so that we can keep these real property statutes that we're working on consistent.
Ms. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
Okay, how about if we, do we attach the bond here in Section 10? I don't see a reference to the bond. The commissioner may assess civil penalty, commissioner may, it constitutes a judgment, may be filed with the county clerk against real property. Where is the bond vulnerable?
Back to page 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for this judgment, for this kind of judgment?
That's for different.
The one thing I could suggest that would be fairly simple to do, if one wanted to be sure to have the same kind of effect with respect to personal property as you have with real property by registering with the county clerk, is it would be fairly simple to, the one other piece of personal property of any value where there's a title interest that can be affected in a concrete way is probably a vehicle. And it may be that you could adopt similar kind of language with respect to vehicles.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to forego the vehicle and the personal property, but I would at least like to have an attachment of the bond. And page 5 is not explicit that the commissioner's penalties may attach to the bond.
Section 10.
So in Section 10, I'd like to add a new subsection that speaks to the commissioner may recover these penalties from the bond if the person has posted a bond as provided in this act.
Senator Kern, Senator Hill, the bond is security for damages that are suffered by workers. An attachment would attach to the bond prior to the likely completion of a lawsuit establishing a judgment, and therefore would have a prior interest in the bond. I would argue that the bond should be available first to pay the damages of workers before penalties, and in any event, the bond, to the extent that it's a cash bond, is held by the commissioner. If the commissioner's got a judgment, knows when the cash bond is going to be released, as an effective matter, the commissioner can levy against the bond in any event.
I see. Okay. Without specific language. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So we're not going after the vehicles. We do not have the Bowley does not go after, or somebody doesn't have to go hire the repo man to go out there and find where this contractor is and get him out of his bus. Is that right? Thank you. Makes it real simple.
Don't go away, because I have a question.
Oops. Okay, Chairman, where are we in now?
Well, I see the phrase here that this penalty, which is assessed by the commissioner, shall constitute a judgment. And I'm just not sure that we can, in a statute, cause a civil penalty to constitute a judgment, which is something that a court imposes after a trial. Now, am I...
Page 9, line 24.
Thus, the amount of penalty is paid within 10 days after the order assessing the penalty becomes final. The order shall constitute a judgment.
Oh, yeah, we do that.
That's exactly what we've been working on.
Equals a judgment. It is a judgment, mm-hmm. just as if a court had done it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And we do it repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
all over the state.
With the Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
All right.
And they get a big red notice that says it's going to have, constitutes a judgment if you don't do it within 10 days.
Okay.
And we know where you live.
All right.
I haven't had this personal experience.
Well, I've seen the forms that they use. Okay. What's next?
Okay, yeah. Moving right along.
All right. Coming up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Pompey, Administrator of APD, Department of Insurance and Finance. I want to go on record to this committee to understand that if indeed the commissioner does fine an agri-grower or labor contractor, and we have fined him previously, that we go through the same procedure. See, we have a citation with an informal or formal, which goes to the referees of the work comp board and then the civilian court. So you have to realize that once one of our citations is affirmed in the court and the agri-grower or the labor contractor does not pay, our fiscal office through the attorney general does the same thing. So you're going to have two state agencies putting liens and so forth and so on.
The judgment's against
it. The judgment. And now if you go to a court, our Supreme Court here in the state of Oregon, when it shakes out, the Oregon Safe Employment Act plus federal OSHA and us is going to be the one, you know, that's involved in this. And you're going to have to work it out on this doubling up, but we do that, and I wanted you to know that for the record, you know, because this is how we're in the industrial situations with contractors and so forth and so on. And what I see here, and I'm being quite truthful with this group, if Boley is into this, then they're going to have a whole system of cases and how to try to, you know, solutions, so forth and so on, with appeals and hearings, because you know, the accuser has to have his or her day in court.
Mr. Well, we Jack's so under, correct.
When we say so under manner provided in ORS 183.310 to 497.
They've got it.
And then the question of who set priorities. If you get there first and get your judgment recorded, then you got first standing. If Boulder comes in second, and if I come in third, that's the way.
But Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you have to realize that if Boley gets there first, if the Department of Health gets there first, if the building authority gets there first, we're going to go in by our law and cite and fine employers, because if we don't, then we're in violation of our law.
I understand that. All mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's not a first, second, or third.
No, I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just mm-hmm. thank you, Mr. Chair.
The interagency agreement will solve all the little glitches.
You bet.
It'll solve them all.
You can talk about this as you're driving around in an automobile. It's going to be some great conversation. Sorry, I won't be able to.
I see a bright partnership. I really
think
do.
So.
It's going to be a brilliant future for these two organizations.
But you can't supersede federal law.
No.
Nobody's trying to do that. We're not trying to supersede. Okay, where are we at?
Okay. Page 11. I'm trying. Line 7.
Page 11?
Page 11.
Well, could I back you up to page 10?
I
hate to make things difficult for you all, but there is an addition on page 10 which belongs there, and that's the word material on line 26, which
good.
I thank you very much. But there's an, I thought
same
we
thing.
Were going to
there.
Put in section, it wasn't though, in the dash.
Oh, no, lines. That's true. You added those.
Yeah, but that's a new one. In section 14, when we give any individual may protest the registration. Do we really mean that, or is it any aggrieved individual?
Mr. Chairman.
Maybe that's broad. Maybe it's not too bad.
Oh, no, we went through this before, and
anybody can complain,
yeah,
but not anybody.
Michael
can
Dale
sue.
Calls
yeah.
up, tells Mr. Tiffany, I think this guy is a rat fink, and Mr. Tiffany says, thank you very much. Have a nice day. And why do you think so? Mr. Dale then states his reason, and then Mr. Tiffany says, thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Okay. You're right. I give up on
that. Okay.
Remember, we're
okay.
Right through that. That's just allow, that's to say that anybody who wants to can call up and complain.
There's another place where we need every aggrieved individual, but we'll come to that.
Okay. Page 11.
Yes, section 17, page 11. Line, the end of line 3, the beginning of line 4, we specified that the government agency authorized to enforce building health or safety standards orders a camp vacated. Previously, it just read government agency determines that a camp is not habitable.
Right.
This is more specific and make sure that they have the authority to actually order the camp vacated. Okay. Section 19.
Wait. I would like to look at section 17. It reads, if any government agency authorized to enforce building health or safety standards orders a camp vacated because the camp is not habitable or otherwise may not be occupied.
What does
and
that do?
That says that if, for instance, LCDC says a camp has been built inappropriately or a county, it's inappropriate with the county zone or some other provision along that line, it may be habitable, but it's illegal.
No, yeah, I think you're, you know, if I'm the LCDC and I'm authorized to enforce a building standard,
building health or safety standards, that wouldn't be LCDC, that's
no,
zoning.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Are they authorized to enforce a
vacation
order?
Habitability would be what
they can order buildings to be demolished.
Yeah, but
if they're built inconsistently with the appropriate plan.
Well, there's lots of people think that they can, but they don't.
Yeah.
They can't. We haven't done that yet, have we?
That's my understanding. Can. They can.
Senator Karen, Senator Hill, I'm not sure on what authority.
Am I wrong on that?
They don't have any local zoning authority. They can
just
do what they did in Washington County.
Okay.
Have an enforcement order. Yeah, I would suggest that on line 6 that we change department to division for consistency.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're leaving that one. Okay.
wait.
Is that okay, Senator Hill?
Well, almost. What if the government agency, that is Boley, comes along and finds, or APD, finds a camp that is not properly registered or properly operated, even though it is habitable, technically habitable. So it meets health and safety standards to the degree that it is not inhabitable, but otherwise it is not a legal camp. Now, we're not ordering the camp to be vacated. We're not allowing the camp to be ordered to be vacated in that case, although we provided other sections of law that allow the camp to be said to be illegal and can't be inhabited if it's illegal, if it's not registered with an operator, a named operator. So I think what the current language here does is it addresses a camp that is registered and then found to be not habitable, and then the named operator has to put up the people someplace while it's made habitable or for 10 days. What if we come along and we find a camp that's not registered, even though it may be inhabited, how do we deal with that situation? Do we have a grace period that says you've got 10 days to get registered? We haven't addressed that anywhere in the bill. 20 days to get registered. Are you?
Senator Karen, Senator Hill, I'm not sure that I agree that a camp has to be registered to fall under Section 17. If a government agency orders a camp to be vacated because the camp is not habitable, that's just any camp. Now, if you want to just order a camp to be vacated and scratch because the camp is not habitable, just for any reason the people have to move out, they've got to be put elsewhere.
Senator Cairns, I was going to suggest that if a camp is habitable and if there's some other reason like non-registration that the person is in violation of law, more likely than not, the remedy is going to be severe and stiff fines and an order to register and not closure of the camp. So we may be talking about a fairly rare instance.
Mr. Dale is correct. We wouldn't want to close a camp if it's habitable, even though it's not registered and therefore doesn't meet test statutes.
Oh, but wait a minute.
But we have to have some way to respond.
Wait a minute. You could declare it not habitable by virtue of the fact it's not registered.
Well, I think the...
Is that possible or is that stretching?
I think that's stretching.
Oh, everybody says that's stretching. Okay.
That's stretching.
We'll leave that camp with its occupants.
It may not.
It's
wouldn't
habitable,
be,
but it ain't registered.
No, it wouldn't be good public policy to throw farm workers out of a camp that's habitable.
Yeah.
Assuming there's always going to be a shortage of farm worker housing, but which otherwise doesn't meet the test. The solution is to cause the camp to become registered and come into compliance.
But if you find me and I've got a place that's not registered and it's habitable, that is to say it meets the building's health and safety standards, I got 50 guys in there and I'm not registered, and you come along and find me, you say, okay, now you go register, and then I go to register and you say, you're a bad character because you're running this unregistered thing over here and you can't get registered, at which point we then close the camp.
There needs to be some process to try to get it to be registered.
Yeah, okay.
But if the owner of any camp made the decision not to register the camp, not to be in compliance with the law, they're effectively making a decision to close the camp. If they decide not to operate it in compliance.